And I note the presence of the quorum. So the first item is to approve the minutes of the members' meeting held on April 6th, 2021. Do I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, for the agenda items, we'll turn to Rich Frolic. Is he here?
He is. He.
We lost Rich.
We lost him.
Why don't, Harry, why don't, if you don't mind, I'll just run through the agenda items.
He's back. Rich, you're muted.
Okay, for the sake of time, I think I'll just run through. Rich, if you join, we'll have your update on the COVID update. So first is this review of the agenda items, which we're going to do on Rich's behalf. The next item will be a COVID-19 update, which I'm going to present a portion of, and if Rich is available on audio at that point or video, he'll do his piece of it. The next item is going to be the corporation's fiscal year 2021 second quarter financial statements, and Mary John is going to do an overview of that, or give that report actually, followed by some of these are pretty standard reports that you've all seen, the debt report. Ellen Duffy is going to give the update on that report, followed by an investment report. Usually there's a little color on these, but most of this is all good news. I'm happy to report. So Ellen Duffy will be doing this investment report. The next item was going to be the report on HDC's credit and risk exposure, which Mary Hom will be presenting, followed by the internal audit report, also by Mary Hom. And then finally, we're going to have an approval of the audit committee charter presentation by Mary Hom. And then at the very end, we're going to go into an executive session that we'll discuss at that point. So with that, Harry, I turn it back to you.
Okay. So the next item is the COVID-19 update.
I'll do my piece first. Rich, do we have you back yet?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll give a little bit of COVID-19 update, and then Rich, if you want to do your piece on that. So we're hopeful all that this may be one of the last times we're giving as kind of a serious or a thorough update on COVID. I don't think any one of us thinks that it's going away. We're very optimistic as we go into summer and we see circulation levels down in New York and across the country, that we're in a much better place, and people are feeling optimistic. There is obviously concern when you look out at the fall, what's going to happen. Obviously, people are following potential for variants, and it looks like there is an uptick just seasonally anyway. There's a study out of North Carolina yesterday that indicated that keeping some distancing and masking in a population of 10 million, which is the state of North Carolina, will save quite a few infections even in going into the winter, and some deaths from that, up to 1 million infections and 4,000 deaths. So there is a good reason to think that we might be exercising some of these precautions as we head into the fall and into the winter, and we continue to get vaccination rates up, which we've been really focused on in New York City as well. As you can see, and we'll say more about this in the board meeting, many of us are in the office today. We've been in the office since May at a kind of a rising tide level. So we are doing it in stages and carefully. We've got distancing. The office team has done an incredible job. There's been a huge amount of work bringing people back safely, and a bunch of folks in May, I think at one point we had as many as a third to half of folks have at least made a return trip, and we're getting into a kind of a regular and periodic attendance. And so that's kind of the biggest update. I think Rich is going to talk more about the portfolio, but that also has been going well. We're doing some more fuller surveys of our borrowers, but you know, we've had a decreasing level of requests for assistance that's come in the last couple of months, and Rich can say a little bit more about that. So with that, I'll turn it over.
Thanks, Eric. So with respect to the portfolio, it does continue to perform well. And one of the things is now that the state has unveiled its emergency rental assistance program that will provide, I think, a bit more opportunity. So we're going to be working with our borrowers and their tenants to make sure that people apply for the relief that is available. And we hope that that will, you know, raise the tide a bit for some of the folks who've been having some difficulty. But generally, you know, we've heard that there are a fair number of tenants who have not been paying rent or are behind. And so there is an opportunity to address some of that. And as I said, we will work with people to make sure that they access whatever assistance is available. But from the perspective of our borrowers, they have generally are current. There are a few who tapped into reserves and the like. Most of that has stopped. And so things are I think, pretty optimistic. When you hear Mary do the second quarter report, you'll hear that our financials are strong. There are a couple of small issues that we'll try to address so that you understand. But other than that, things are pretty good. Thank you.
Yeah, if I could add to that too, I talked to some of our bigger folks that developers who run a large portfolio. Most people are reporting for May 92 to 99% collection. But as Rich pointed out, there's still a big gap from last year. There are folks who fell behind. And some of the studies like Furman showed, while most people have done reasonably well keeping up, there are significant numbers of people who've fallen deeply behind. And that's the piece. There are still folks who are missing significant rents from last year even. The other thing that we've noticed is the affordable portfolios have held up pretty well. It's some of the market rate stuff in New York that's really had both economic vacancy, but also significant physical vacancy, which is not so much our world, but still it's the city that we all attend to. So more on that, as Rich pointed out. So, thank you, Harry. Thank you, Rich.
Regarding the commercial, I know that our focus is housing, but there are commercial spaces in a number of the properties that we're involved in. And so are you seeing anything there that's concerns you?
I'll say a little bit and then Rich, you might want to say more. The short answer is not really. And it's partially because we have always had very careful underwriting and we haven't relied heavily on the commercial components. I mean, that was, as you know, a conscious decision on a policy basis that we have kept our exposure to that at a minimum and nothing really depends on that flow. But the answer is yes, commercial has definitely been hit harder than other parts of the world and office space as well. But we are not as exposed to it. I don't know if others, Rich, you want to say any more about that?
I think you got it.
Thank you.
Okay. Next item is the report on the second quarter financials. Mary John.
Thank you, Harry. Good morning, everybody. So the corporation's financial statements as of the second quarter fiscal year 2021 covers the period November 1, 2020 through April 30th, 2021. As the economy continues to recover from the worst of the economic downturn related to the COVID-19 pandemic, the corporation continues to grow its balance sheet with bond issuances exceeding $1.5 billion as of the end of the second quarter. The new money raised will be used to finance 12 new construction loans, as well as preservation and refinancing loans closed during the period. Total assets were at $23.5 billion, increased by $1.5 billion or 7% from fiscal year end 2020. The increase was primarily due to the growth in the mortgage portfolio by a net of $1.4 billion from the end of fiscal year 2020. The corporation's mortgage portfolio continues to perform well, with only one loan currently in forbearance as of April 30th. Total liabilities, including deferred inflows, were at $19.9 billion, increased by $1.4 billion or 7.8% from fiscal year end 2020, mainly due to the increase in the bonds and debt obligations payable by a net of $1.1 billion. The corporation had total revenues of $311.7 million at the end of the second quarter, a decrease of $49.2 million over the same period last year. The lower revenues were due to the lower fair market valuation on the outstanding investment portfolio, which decreased by $51.9 million from a year ago. Management intends to hold investment securities to maturity. As a result, the likelihood of this loss being realized is minimal. The net position as of April 30th was at $3.5 billion, an increase of $93.5 million since the end of fiscal year in 2020. The net income for the period was the $93.5 million, which comprised of operating revenues of $332.8 million, an increase of $29.4 million or 9.7% Operating expenses were at 21.8 million, a decrease of 3.9 million, and non-operating expenses of, was 21.1 million, which was primarily because of the unrealized investment loss. This concludes my remarks. If there are any questions, I will pass you on to Rich for some additional information on the market valuation on the investment portfolio. Thank you.
I just wanted to explain a little bit because that number of the mark-to-market loss is rather high. As Mary said, we do plan to hold to maturity, so we don't expect to experience a loss. I just wanted to give a little bit more color that we have about $1.5 billion invested in agency callable securities, and that's where we're seeing that big loss. The income that we're getting from that annualized for this year will be $19 million. If we invested instead in either very short or out of money market at 20 bips, we would get 3 million or less. So this is a conscious decision to get actual revenue that at a higher level. And then, but unfortunately, we get the fluctuations of the market. So as the overall interest rates have risen a bit in the last quarter, we saw the valuation be impacted by that. Once again, we'll hold to maturity, but the revenue that we're getting is actual revenue versus a paper loss. So if there are any questions, I'm glad to go into that, or Ellen can add in as well.
Okay. Any questions? There being none, then we'll get to the debt report. Ellen?
Thank you. The corporation's debt report is as of April 30th, 2021. The last debt report presented to the audit committee was as of February 28th, 2021. But during this time, the corporation issued 6 series of open resolution bonds totaling $678.5 million, 2 standalone bond series in the amount of $48.3 million, and we remarketed 2 series of open resolution bonds totaling $38.4 million. There are no bond redemptions in March or April. The corporation's debt outstanding as of April 30th is approximately $14.08 billion. The corporation's statutory debt capacity is $15.5 billion. Any questions?
We're still going to apply for an increase in the $15.5 billion cap?
Yes, we do have, the bill is actually moving through the legislature. It got passed by the assembly, I believe, for $17 billion. And so it's just moving through. I don't know, Rich, if you want to add anything.
No, that is the update. It's right. I think it was the Senate and then going.
The Senate. Okay, sorry.
Believe it. So it's Harry, it's 15.5 to 17 is the request. And it's traveling with our standard authorization. So.
Okay, good. Okay, Ellen, we'll now switch to the investment report.
Okay, thank you. Corporation's investment portfolio as of May 17th, 2021, and the funds under management total approximately $5.3 billion. And this report reflects routine investment activity. Any questions?
Any questions? Okay, then Mary Hahn, report on HDC's credit risk exposure.
Thank you. Good morning. The last report to the audit committee was dated February 28th, 2021, and today's report is dated April 30th, 2021. There were no rating agency actions of note, and there were no approved counterparties, new approved counterparties. HDC's counterparty exposure remains diversified, with the largest exposures continuing to be with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Investments rated AA or higher were 48% of total investments versus 47% at the last report, while investments rated BBB or not rated were 32% of total investments versus 31% at the last report. And these investments are fully collateralized by high quality U.S. Treasury or agency securities and or Federal Home Loan Bank letters of credit. HDC exposure to liquidity providers was unchanged at about $348 million. Any questions?
There being none. And we'll continue, Mary, with the internal audit report.
Great. In accordance with the International Professional Practices Framework, or the IPPF, the conceptual framework that organizes authoritative guidance provided by the Institute of Internal Auditors, HDC has conducted its internal audit internal assessment for 2020. This assessment is part of HDC's Quality Assurance and Improvement Program, as dictated by the IPPF, and helps to ensure that HDC's internal audit function operates effectively. The attached assessment outlines the structure and activities of the Internal Audit Department for calendar year 2020, including all audits completed, projects and initiatives, governance and oversight activities, and updates regarding employee development and ongoing training that helps to ensure that staff remains current on internal audit best practices. As COVID impacted us in 2020 and the department had some staffing challenges, we shifted our focus to those areas we felt needed attention, such as updating the corporation's business continuity plan. Another focus was starting and coordinating the work of HDC's PII working group. The PII working group finalized the corporation's privacy policy last summer, and earlier this year finalized the corporation's PII policy. This group will continue its work into 2021 as we seek to roll out training to staff around identifying and securing PII. This concludes my internal assessment report. Are there any questions about the internal assessment for 2020?
Okay, there being none, and we'll move on to the approval of the Audit Committee Charter.
I'm pleased to recommend that the members approve the Audit Committee Charter found in your package today. HDC's Audit Committee Charter requires an annual review by the committee to determine the charter's adequacy. The last time the Audit Committee reviewed and approved the Audit Committee Charter was May 21, 2020. There has been one slight revision to the charter on page 4 regarding the addition of a complaint intake form on the corporation's website. If there are no questions, the members are asked to approve the Audit Committee Charter as revised and presented here today.
Okay, do I have a motion for that approval?
I move.
Second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? There being none, the motion carries. And now we'll go into executive session.
Okay, the next internal audit report to the committee pertains to the corporation's cybersecurity protocols. Since this information is highly sensitive, I request that the audit committee move to executive session for the purpose of presenting and discussing this report.
Okay, due to the sensitive nature of the internal audit report on cybersecurity, I move that we go into executive session. Do I have a motion?
Move.
Second?
Second.
Okay, any opposed? Motion carries.
Have we moved into executive session?
Yes, we have.
Okay, I just want to confirm with the IT.
Just quick technical note, we just returned from the executive session.
Harry, you might want to read your piece and re-mic.
Okay. Kathy?
I think for the record, Harry, you should.
I should what?
You should restate that no votes or actions were taken.
Okay. We have now returned from the executive session and no actions or votes were taken during that session.
Okay, and then I have one item to cover in other business. Okay. HDC and HPD, in conjunction with our partners, are making significant strides in housing homeless New Yorkers. In 2020, over 1,200 homeless households were placed in HDC-HPD assisted developments. Projections indicate that over the next 12 months, 3,300 homeless referrals will be housed in our developments. This success is due in part to changes in our marketing guidelines, which now require 15% of units to be set aside for homeless households, as well as the creation of augmented city family homelessness and eviction prevention supplement vouchers. HPD currently handles all 8 homeless placements in HDC's affordable housing portfolios. The HPD Homeless Placement Services team matches homeless applicants to available units, assists landlords through the qualification process, and tracks every step of the applicant's process through tenancy, all in coordination with the New York City Human Resources Administration and the New York City Department of Homeless Services. Substantial increases in homeless placements has created staffing capacity issues for HPD's asset management team that jeopardize the timely placement of homeless applicants, and this requires an immediate solution. As such, HPD has requested HDC temporarily assist HPD with the homeless placement process for the anticipated 1,000 HDC-financed homeless set-aside units becoming available over the next 12 months. HDC researched alternatives to address this HPD capacity issue, which included creating a new division at HDC modeled after HPD's homeless placement group, contracting with a third-party vendor, and increasing capacity at HPD through the hiring of temporary staff. The first two options presented logistical and technical challenges that would delay relief and exacerbate the timely placement of homeless households. This includes time needed for a hiring process, a very steep learning curve with a newly created division at HDC, and the near impossibility of connecting to DHS's IT systems since HDC is not set up on the city's IT systems. Therefore, HDC has determined that the best solution would be to provide HPD with support staff through temporary hiring contracts over the next 12 months. Given HPD's existing infrastructure and expertise in placing homeless households, this is the most efficient solution at this time. In addition, keeping HPD as the primary agency for the coordination and placement of the city's most vulnerable population has the added benefit of eliminating any confusion for landlords, agency partners, and housing applicants, as the homeless placement process remains centralized with HPD. Most importantly, this option keeps the pipeline moving, avoids a backlog in homeless placements, and helps ensure that homeless households move into permanent housing more rapidly. As a result of this solution, an MOU between HPD and HDC has been executed, providing for the hiring of 5 temporary employees through their existing vendor for a period of 12 months at a cost of $330,000 to HDC. As this will cross 2 fiscal years, HDC will incur a cost of approximately $165,000 this fiscal year and again next fiscal year, which will be charged to the temporary staff line in the corporation's operating budget. If there are any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Any questions?
Does this include an effort to move families out of the temp hotels into permanent or transitional or supportive housing? I mean, during COVID, a lot of people are now still housed in hotels. Is this part of the effort to depopulate the homeless from the hotels?
Denise, I could say that could be part of it. I mean, effectively, it's all of the kind of homeless placement piece, however that may come up and evolve, keeping that between DHS and HPD. So any component of that is potential, but the primary function, and this is why we think it's really important too, is to make sure that the marketing and the placement proceed so that the pipeline can move. Just to putting aside that, and I totally agree with the human side of this and all of those elements, the other piece of this really is that it does keep the whole pipeline and process moving most expeditiously. But to your more specific point, and I can get more detail on what components of that might be included, all of that work is going to continue as it had been continuing just at HPD with expanded capacity. So if there's pieces of that and what pieces of it might be this hotel piece or COVID related, we can break that out for you. But the overarching thing was just to increase the capacity broadly in every category.
I only raise it because it's likely to be very controversial. So the good deed is getting the pipeline moving and hiring staff and all of that. The other side of no good deed is like what the politics of that movement will be.
Totally understood. And we also felt that, and you heard this, that just expanding the capacity for HPD to continue with the program and policy piece of it, we're simply helping them to handle that. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah.
In general, there have been articles about converting a number of the hotels to affordable housing. Is that something that has some momentum?
Yeah, well, I'll say this because we're short on time, but I will say this, and we're happy to go into it more. We have looked at a lot of it. It's very hard to programmatize right now, particularly the hotels. It doesn't look like discounts are enough to really make it make sense in a lot of ways. We are working on one that does, as a one-off, seem to work for a variety of reasons, and you'll see that presentation at some point. But it doesn't look like something that right now has a lot of traction broadly. So we shall see more. Some people are even more concerned, quite honestly, about the office stock than they are about the hotel stock at this point.
Okay. Is there any other business? And if there be no other business, I would like to call a motion to adjourn. I have a second.
I move.
Hello.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. The meeting is adjourned.